can I ask, like, what your fascination is with animals from the different states or countries that we do?
I just think they're interesting.
You think they're interesting?
Yeah.
So when I tell you that we're doing a certain state, you automatically think, oh, what kind of animals should I be looking up?
It's, like, my top priority.
So far...
I really like moose, though. They can be nasty, but I kind
of... So what is the plural of moose? Is it mooses or mises?
Mooses, mises?
I don't know.
Mooses. You know what I mean, Jelly Bean?
Welcome back to Fine Wine and Evil Spirits, a husband and wife podcast where we bicker about the unearthly while sipping on booze. I'm Sarah.
Kevin here.
And we are back in the United States this week looking at Minnesota. Tonight we're both drinking Duffy's Cut, an Irish-style red ale, which is from Doylestown Brewing Company in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, which is conveniently located 15 minutes away from us. I was so upset that I found this today, and I wish that we would have found it for our first episode. Regardless, it's a great find, and I really like the taste. It has a little bit of a punch to it. I wasn't
maybe
expecting
that. Maybe because Irish.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe. Irish can box, you know? Yeah. Yo, 1-2, boom, boom.
Okay. Yeah. So on the back of the can it says, Duffy's Cut is the location near Malvern where 57 Irish immigrant railroaders died while constructing mile 59 of the Pennsylvania's pioneering railroad in the summer of 1832. Recorded in history, music, and art, this is a tale of hard-working Irish men and women who died of murder and cholera. It is an important story in the making of America.
It is.
I was so shocked when I found it. I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, I was shocked too. I was like, whoa, like, am I looking at that right?
It was a very cool find.
At least they honor it, you know, like, they honor the people.
And since it's local and everything.
I like the can too. I like it.
Yeah. It's so cute with all the
on the back, what does it say on the back of the can?
I just read what was on the back of the can.
Oh, you did? Oh. Yeah. It was a layup for you, huh?
So, way to listen to that intro.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's get into this. The first story is the Four Paw Mansion, which I don't know if I'm saying...
Four Paw?
I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Like Dog Paw?
No.
Like Paul Bear? No.
It's a person's mansion. His last name is Four Paw. And I don't know if I'm saying it right because I tried looking it up and there were a couple different ways to say it. Some people were saying Four Paw, with an F sound at the end.
Mm.
But I'm going to go with Paul because that's how I read it to begin with.
I'm just going to Americanize it.
I'm going to Americanize it. So Joseph Four Paw was known in St. Paul, Minnesota as a well-respected businessman in the 1800s. He was only 36 when he had the role of the senior partner in the Midwest's largest dry goods store, which administered supplies in the Union troops during the war. He purchased 5 lots in a highly exclusive neighborhood. So these are just plots, like land. Instead of just buying houses, he bought the land.
Nice.
5 of them. So
five
think of
land?
Yeah, think of 5 houses and just think about the land that they're on. So he
was trying to build a community or something?
No. I'm getting to that. Okay. He had a mansion built and demanded that the views for each window was a perfectly manicured lawn and gardens. Inside, he had expensive furniture to match the gorgeous outside. So
with his pinky out.
With his pinky out. He was drinking wine with his pinky out, probably.
Yeah.
I wonder if they drank wine a lot or if they would prefer to drink a beer.
I know they did wine a lot.
Oh! Anyway. In 1870, Mary, Joseph's wife, and his 2 daughters moved into the mansion, which was 3 stories tall. Because the mansion was so big, they had to hire a large staff to take care of the place and the needs of the family, including a service maid named Molly.
Molly.
While Molly was hired to cater specifically to Mary, her beauty and personality caught the eye of Joseph. Surprise, surprise. An affair started between the two, and other members of the staff started to notice how the two would go off on their own a lot and behind closed doors.
Not open doors?
No, closed ones. So Mary seemed to be the last to know, but eventually she came into the bedroom and found Molly and Joseph together in bed. So she demanded that Joseph ended the affair, which he did, but the drama continued when Molly found out that she was pregnant. Instead of facing the consequences, Molly killed herself by tying a rope to the third floor chandelier and the other end around her neck, and then threw herself out the window.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So, note to self.
She felt guilty.
No, I'm telling you, don't ever have an affair with a maid.
Cause
I will find out, and she will hang herself. That sounds a little psycho.
This is a confession.
No, it's not a confession. Out there.
We ain't talking Usher neither.
The four Paul family left the mansion and went to Europe to start their lives over. Eventually, they came back to St. Paul, Minnesota, and had another home built, but it was only a block away from their original house. And they could see it. Why would you want to see the house where your lover hanged herself?
The view, I don't know.
The view. Oh, I remember that one time when we had an affair and that she hung herself. So despite their attempt to forget the past, Joseph couldn't help but find himself in a depressed state that he couldn't get out of. And the family tried to convince others that it was because he was worried about the business, but the business was fine. And it was the death of Molly that he could not get over. He was 58 when he found a secluded area on the grounds of his home and shot himself dead. So, 100 years after the house was built in 1970, the Fort Paul Mansion was transformed into a French restaurant. But it was again recently opened as another restaurant. So, I don't know how long it was because I was trying to find out the timeline. But since the 1970s, it was reopened again, I guess under new management. There have been claims about Molly and Joseph haunting the building.
Hold on, but he didn't die in the same building.
I know. Interesting.
How does that work?
I don't know, because I always think that, you know, ghosts and spirits, they are kind of tied down to where they were.
Would Molly be like a pregnant spirit?
I don't know. What if, I don't know. But they recently closed down in, I think it was March of this year.
Are you sure they're closed down?
Yeah. Like double closed down. The chef actually passed away and they closed down.
All it took was the cook to
call it a
rat.
Well, I mean,
call it Saran,
maybe,
it's a rat.
Maybe it'll open again under a different ownership, but who knows? Those who have claimed to be around Molly's ghost say that she is known for being a prankster, and the majority of the activity is on the third floor where she hung herself. And the following is an account of Molly's shenanigans. One night, an employee who closed the restaurant noticed as he drew near his car that a light was still on upstairs. He went to check but found the third floor dining room dark. He locked up once more and headed to his car, only to see a brighter light on upstairs. This time, as he entered the dining room, he saw a candle lit on the table. Frustrated, he announced out loud, "Molly, I am tired and I want to go home. No more games." He blew out the candle and left. This time, the room stayed dark, and Molly normally obeys when she is asked to behave. Those who have seen Molly say that she has authentic period clothing on, which makes sense because ghosts probably can't change their clothes. Molly also talks to people and particularly like speaking with new brides. Like when they get married there, I guess.
They're scared the shit out of them?
No, she likes talking to them. She wants to have a conversation with somebody. Joseph's ghost, on the other hand, mostly vacates the basement in the mansion. He apparently does not like when the lights are off and if the staff does not turn turn them off, he likes to make a big mess for everyone to clean up, including tables and chairs, just like moved around and rearranged. There have been numerous pictures taken throughout the years where they have claimed that Molly and Joseph have photobombed, but I couldn't find any when I did a Google search.
Mm.
But people talk about it. They talk about her...
Some speculation.
You say speculation, I think, every single time we talk about ghosts.
I'm just saying, like, people just want to go...
You need to chill out on the speculation.
I'll find a different word. I'm not thesaurus yet.
Yeah, you're going to have to get the thesaurus.
Open up the vocab.
So next, I think you'll be excited about. I don't know, maybe a little bit. But Minnesota's mysterious Viking runestone.
Runestone?
Yes. So it was 1898 when Olaf Oman, a Swedish immigrant, found a 200-pound slab of sandstones buried in the roots of a poplar tree in Alexandria, Minnesota. It was 30 inches long, 16 inches wide, and 6 inches thick, covered in carved runes. I always thought it was like ruins, but I guess it's not. It's runes. That confused me at first. The slab was translated by a Scandinavian language newspaper in nearby Kensington, not our Philadelphia Kensington, Minnesota. Which discovered that the tablet told the story of a Viking expedition in 1362, which is before Europeans had even been recorded in America.
Hmm.
Despite the interest of historians for over 100 years, some believe that it is a hoax because no one has been able to prove its authenticity since they began examining it in 1910. Some believe that Oman fabricated the inscription.
Is that what?
Don't make me say that 5 times. So thinking about it, I'm like, so we found it underneath the roots of a tree, right? So my mind is like, why would you make that up? You know?
They made everything up back then, though.
In 1898?
Yeah. There was a lot of mysteries still, though.
Mysteries. No, you're trying to say no doubt, aren't you? Memories?
No.
Yes, you are. I feel like it's a 200-pound slab, so I feel like that's something that had to...
Huge, right?
Yeah, right? So that would have been, like, planned out for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did they move it anywhere?
And, well, let me get to that. But the Vikings had traveled so many different places and conquered so many different areas. Why would it be so unbelievable to assume that they didn't get over here? You know?
Yeah, but I mean, how would they even land in Minnesota?
Well, back then it wasn't Minnesota, it was just a piece of land, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean...
I don't know.
Maybe.
So, and then there's also, geologists have examined the rune extensively, saying that the carvings don't look over 50 to 100 years old. Not only that, but the tree, the poplar tree that he apparently found it under, was only 30 to 40 years old based on the age of trees in the surrounding area, which I'm not sure how that really disproves it. Just because it's like, okay, so you build it over the tree. I mean, put the tree over it. So anyway, Alexandria is still known for the rune despite the criticism. They have made a replica of it where it was discovered, in addition to a statue of a Viking that has become known as Big Ole. It's O. It's O, but there's no like little tick over the E. It's O-L-E. Big Ole. I'm just going with Big Ole. They were both taken to New York in 1964, and the statue and the replica were transferred back to Alexandria, and people call it the birthplace of America because the Vikings found it, maybe. We don't know. So the Vikings found it, then it must be the birthplace. I'm trying to, in my head, trying to think.
I don't even know how they even got there.
Where were the Vikings from?
I'm looking at a map, and I really don't. Unless they somehow, like, took the Mississippi.
Where were they from again? I forget where they were from. What country?
I drank too much. So,
Scandinavian?
Right, no.
I don't know. I feel
from,
like it's
Denmark. Norway.
Norway,
yeah.
Where is Norway on the map?
Norway is by...
That's too much thinking right now. We'll get back to you on that one. So, a fun fact. The Minnesota Vikings were actually named because of the Kensington Runestone. It's become such a huge part of the culture in Minnesota that there are businesses everywhere that use the symbol. The rune has bounced around extensively since it was discovered and has been in the Smithsonian Institution. The Kensington Runestone is currently on display in the Runestone Museum in Alexandria, Minnesota. If anyone has seen it in person, let us know what you think.
I want to see it in person.
Maybe one day we will. We'll visit my brother in Minnesota and go see the Runestone.
It's a bucket list thing. High five this right here.
High five. Okay, so our last story is on the Wendigo, which is also pronounced Wendigo, depending on who you talk
Wendigo,
to.
Wendigo, that's how I would...
I say Wendigo. But if you look at it, it's spelled Wendigo.
Eh, forget all them letters. Wendigo.
Wendigo. Wendigo.
How would the Winchester say it? That's how I look at it. Wendigo.
I forget how the Winchesters say it.
I always thought that said Wendigo.
Now I want to watch the episode of Supernatural where the Wendigo is there.
Like the Eye of the Tiger one?
I love the Eye of the Tiger one. Every time I hear that song now, I think of Gene Winchester.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's so many different stories of the Wendigo. They go back to a time where the harshest of winters and famine... a man had gone against taboo and out of desperation ate human flesh. It's said that an evil spirit possessed him, causing an insatiable hunger and that could never be satisfied. So, popular in Native American folklore, it kind of follows the same pattern, except, I don't know, I feel like every tribe or every story has kind of a different, like little pieces are different. But the overall is the same. There was a guy who was out in the woods and he succumbs to the conditions of the environment.
Right.
And for survival, he decided to eat another person, which confuses me a little bit because whenever they talk about it, it seems like the person's already alone. So who are they going to eat? You know? If they're alone.
Maybe he's eating himself.
No, Kevin, I don't think that he ate himself because then he wouldn't be alive, right?
Well, eat a finger at a time.
Ew, that's terrible. Can you imagine eating your own
toes.
Finger? And they'd be frozen. Like, if it's really cold, it would be frozen. You can't
Maybe
make a fire.
Maybe he was with people, because wasn't there a time where there was, like, a group of people?
You're thinking of the Donner Party.
Exactly.
But that's different. That was like, what is it called? Caravan times. It was different. Wait, was the Donner Party? I forget. I have to look it up later. So the creature is found in cold climates, and it is immune to the coldest of climates. So it's not affected by snow and winter. You know, which is funny because as I was looking online, I saw some recent sightings of a Wendigo in Texas, which is strange because
recent?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
And I chose not to look into them just because we're talking about Minnesota.
Right.
So I didn't want to delve into it. Maybe when we do all the states and go back to Texas, we can talk about a Wendigo in Texas. Wendigo. Wendigo. I will use that interchangeably.
Wendigo? When to go.
No.
When to go.
There are some people that believe that he is a relative of Bigfoot and others that believe that he is part of the werewolf family. His appearance is not what you would think of a predator, with tightly stretched skin across the bones and almost 15 feet tall. He has been described as a skeletal creature with large eyes and like an owl and razor-sharp claws. The Wendigo is never satisfied and always looking for someone else to eat. In the 20th century, the Algonquins, which is a Native American tribe, claimed that several of their people went missing without warning, and they believed that it was due to a Wendigo, and called him the spirit of a lonely place. There is another translation of a Wendigo that is the evil spirit that devours mankind. This version believes that the Wendigo can curse humans and possess them to dig into their digging into their thoughts and turning them into Wendigos as well. Its speed has been significantly different depending on the version you are listening to. He is either extremely fast or staggers around, but speed is not what he uses to capture prey. The Wendigo draws people in by mimicking human voices, even calling for help to get them away from civilization.
Smart.
Yes. So if you are in the woods and you hear somebody that you love, go
directly towards it.
Yeah. Don't go directly towards it. Kevin, you are full of bad advice. But I mean, like, you hear a crying baby, or you hear somebody that you care about calling for help,
you're going to go directly towards it.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Go directly towards it.
So why work harder when you can work smarter and just use your vocal cords to sound like the person that someone else is looking for? And then you can just draw them in, and then they come to you, and you don't have to go looking for them.
I'm over here.
Exactly.
I can't see you. I'm over here.
So, sightings of the Wendigo were heavy in the 1800s and 1920s, but there has not been anything significant since then. There's also a mental illness called Wendigo psychosis, where individuals have an excessive craving for human flesh, which could be completely made up, apparently. One true story that may have sparked the creation of the Wendigo psychosis is there was a plains tree trapper in the late 1800s who, after the death of his eldest son, killed and ate the rest of his family while within reach of the outpost at which he might have gotten supplies. Another famous Wendigo story is Jack Fiddler, and excuse me if I butcher this, but he was an Ogee Cree man who reportedly hunted and cured others of Wendigoism. When he killed one supposed Wendigo, he was tried and convicted of murder and executed. The fact that the psychosis was localized both geographically and culturally and seemed to be vanishing as the culture vanished caught a lot of anthropologists' eyes. The cultures that were believed to be affected by the Wendigo psychosis died out pretty quick, along with the stories. Throughout the years, Wendigo psychosis became a catch-all for mental illness without any solid evidence of a person actually suffering from the disease. So, basically, if you were acting out, you were a Wendigo.
Yeah.
Or a Wendigo, yeah. Whatever you decided to call it at that time.
Yep. That's insane.
I feel like...
Did he just eat one person? He his whole family, you said?
Whole family.
Damn.
I guess it depends. Like, his eldest son died, but it didn't say how the son died. So maybe that also has something to do with it. Like, the nature of the death.
Did he not have anything else to eat? You just figured, like, yeah, I'm just going to go eat these people real quick, and I'll be right back. Like, you know...
You better not ever eat me. Because if you eat me, we're done. I'll never...
Well, first of all, if I ate you, you would be done.
Hopefully not well, then.
That's all.
Can you imagine eating another person, though?
I can't imagine eating anything that's living, actually. Anymore, at least.
Just, like... Not that I want to know, but I kind of want to know. Nope. Like, no. No, again, not that I want to know, but...
You got a little buzz going on. Nope. Good.
Can you imagine, like, cooking human flesh?
No. Reminds me of that one, a serial killer? That, you'd eat human flesh?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, Jeffrey Dahmer?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know. You can't understand people. Like, no matter how much you try.
You try to have logic behind it.
I feel like I can never understand something like that.
This sounds like insane.
Ugh. I just... Would you season it? Like, would you put, like, garlic powder on it? Or would you just eat it?
A little salt, a little pepper, you know, a little spice.
Everything nice.
Tastes like chicken, I guess.
Would you marinate it? Like, if you were... Like, would you... I don't know.
I mean, you want to interview a cannibal?
No. No.
So, how would you actually eat this this leg here?
Ew. All right. I'm done with that. And it looks like it's the bottom of the bottle. We hope that you enjoy the episode. Make sure you like us on Facebook and leave a review. Also, follow us on Twitter at FWES Podcast and Instagram at Fine Wine and Evil Spirits. We also have our website up and running, so please go to the website and sign up for emails. Another reminder that PodCoin pays for you to listen to podcasts. Take advantage and use our code EVILSPIRITS, all one word, to get 300 points when you sign up. If you have any stories that relate to anything that we've talked about, send us a message, and with your permission, we'll feature your story on an upcoming episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope that you will be back next week. Don't forget, 5 stars or...
We'll haunt you.